Hola. Welcome to the Sunday night. There is a solution, newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. Visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep the special service active. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. Our speaker today is a compulsive overeater and a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions in the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After their share, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program and what the speaker has shared. Welcome, Robin, a compulsive overeater from Ohio. Thanks, Robin.
Thanks, Donna. Good evening, everybody. My name is Robin Weaver, and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. I am from Cincinnati, Ohio. My abstinence date is June 14th, 2021. And I am so grateful for a relationship with a higher power and to the program of Overeaters Anonymous for teaching me how to do that. I've been asked to share on how I got recovered by working the steps as outlined in the Big Book. And I was just reading with a sponsee before this meeting, and we were in there as a solution. And I love how it says on the last page of the book, it says, each individual describes in his or her own language and from his or her own point of view, the way that they establish their relationship with God. And I was reminded as I was talking to my sponsee, I said, you know, if you're here to chase abstinence or chase a thin body or, you know, a healthy body weight or any of that, I said, this, you're going to end up back in the food. But if you're here to chase a relationship with a higher power and a spiritual experience and a spiritual awakening, then I can promise you, you're going to find recovery. And I didn't know that when I got here. I started my 12-step journey in Alcoholics Anonymous in 2003. I've been sober since then. But here's what happened. They took away the alcohol, and guess what I turned to? I turned to food and exercise immediately. I ran my first full marathon at a year's sobriety because I was eating. And the reason I like to eat is this, in the doctor's opinion, on the bottom, I think in the fourth edition, it's on Roman numeral 28. And I like reading this in the first person. I eat essentially because I like the effect produced by food. The sensation is so elusive that while I admit it is injurious, I cannot, after a time, differentiate the true from the false. To me, my alcoholic food life seems the only normal one. I'm restless, which means I can't sit still. I'm irritable, which means I'm easily annoyed. And I'm discontented, which means I'm never satisfied, unless I can again experience the sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few bites, bites which I see other people taking with impunity, without any penalty whatsoever. And after I have succumbed to the desire again, as so many do, the phenomenon of craving develops. I pass through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful with a firm resolution not to eat again. This is repeated over and over, and unless I can experience an entire psychic change, there's very little hope of my recovery. The word ease. The sense in ease and comfort is I just want to be soothed. I hurt easily and I don't suffer well. And food takes away the discomfort that I can't stand. I cannot stand being uncomfortable. I've gotten better at it, but through the help of a higher power and a relationship with that. But like I have very little tolerance for it. And you know, here's I mean, I could tell you all the things I tried to, to keep a healthy body weight. A lot of them had to do a lot of them had to do with diets. A lot of them had to do with exercise. A lot of them had to do with manipulating food and trying to make it fit into a certain category. But the bottom line is that my willpower is no good against this disease. I love Bill's story because he goes through so many different ways that he tries to stop drinking on his own, the way that I tried to stop eating on my own. In the beginning of his story, he studies. He goes back to law school. Well, I studied too. I studied all kinds of things on how to lose weight. He takes up golf to try to dress up his disease. I took up running to try to dress up my disease. If you ran as much as I did, you would eat as much as I did too. And I tried to make it look good. I tried different recipes. I tried different meal plans. I tried all kinds of different things to dress up my disease. I was determined. I was absolutely determined to keep the weight off. I tried renewing my resolve. There are certain fad diets out there that are really about willpower and strength. And I tried that. And when I failed, I would quote unquote manage better next time, which builds it as well. I pulled geographicals. And even there's one point in Bill's story where he thinks so well of himself. He goes, it's on page 8. He goes, "I who had thought so well of myself and my abilities, of my capacity to surmount obstacles, was cornered at last." And he talks about how the loneliness, the despair, and that bitter morass of self-pity, it's a total blow to the guy's pride that he cannot stop drinking. And I had several blows to my pride that I could not stop eating. And that didn't even do it. And when I, when Ebby finally comes over to Bill's house, the one thing that I love about Bill's story is when Ebby pushes the drink across the table and Bill says, he refused, or Bill pushes a drink across the table and Ebby refuses it. And Bill says, "Disappointed but curious, I wondered what had gotten into the fellow. He wasn't himself. Come, what's this all about?" I queried. And so the thing that Bill does that I love is that he's curious. He's curious about how his friend got sober. And I will share this with you. I at one point here in Cincinnati, my AA home group was an open meeting where anybody from any fellowship could come in into this open AA meeting. And there was a woman in the meeting who talked about an addiction, but she talked about it in regards to food. And I was like, God, that's so interesting. Like, I didn't know that people could have that. But when she shared about it, I totally related to what she said. And I was always like, what is this? And at the time, it was like 2017, 2018, like I was noticing that my body was shutting, like not able to handle the amount of exercise that I was putting it through to stay on top of my weight. I had plantar fasciitis, horrible plantar fasciitis. My knees hurt, my hips hurt. And this woman shared about recovery from food. And I was like, I think I might have that. And I went to one or two OA meetings at the time. I didn't understand any of it. I didn't understand the allergy of the body, the obsession of the mind. I didn't get it at all. I don't even think at the point I got it in Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't think I understood it there either, but I was sober. And I remember her. I talked to her. So in 2021, when I was literally ready to put a gun to my head because I couldn't stay out of the kitchen because I couldn't stop eating M&Ms, it was a year into COVID. Things were crazy. My job was, I'm a teacher, and so teaching was just like ramped up. I was like, this is like, if you taught in a school where you had to wear masks and every other week, like you'd eat like I did too, and that was my excuse. But like I was so restless and so irritable and so discontent, and the only thing that would solve it for 2 seconds was chocolate, and I could not stay out of the kitchen. And I remember having my hand in that bag and going, I am going, if this is as good as it gets, I'm gonna kill myself. I can't stand this. And I couldn't run anymore. Like there was no amount of exercise I could do in addition to what I was doing to keep the weight off. I was probably 20 to 25 pounds overweight. Nothing crazy, but it was enough. You know, I'm tipping the scales and it was getting a little bit more every time. And I can't stand it. I cannot stand myself. My children were getting in the way of my eating. I wanted you to go to bed so I could eat the way I wanted to eat. And my husband's like, "What are you doing in the kitchen?" I'm like, "I just leave me alone." And I remember thinking about this woman, and I was like, "I need to call her. I need to talk to her." And I went over to her house. It was one of the first visitors she had had since COVID hit. And she's like, "You're like the first person who's come over to my house." It was at the end of May, and we sat in her living room and we talked, and she shared, and she kept saying, "I can relate to what you're talking about." And I didn't want her to say that because I knew what that meant. I felt so hopeless and so afraid and so scared about what was going to come. And she gave me a bunch of meetings. And my home group meets on Friday mornings at 6:15. We're a Zoom meeting based here out of Cincinnati, 6:15 in the morning on Fridays. It's called the Sunrise Solutions Group. If you ever want to plug in, we're there every Friday. And I went to that meeting, and there were several people on there that shared. I knew to write down numbers, and I did, and I called a couple people and this one woman and I connected, and I don't remember much of what we talked about, but I remember telling her this. I said, "I am so scared about the God thing." I said, "I don't have a relationship at all. I have nothing." And she said, "That's okay." She said, "That's totally fine." She's like, are you willing to do the work? And I said, "Yes, I'm totally in." And so she later sent me an email that had a list of all the things that I needed to be willing to do. And I remember reading it on my phone and being like, "What?" And then holding my phone up to my husband going, "Can you believe what she's asking me to do?" I said, "This is insane. Does she not know who I am?" And right there is a fixed idea that like that I there's no way I could possibly do what she's asking me to do, which goes, you know, which is something Bill tried. Bill tried all kinds of fixed ideas, and none of them worked. But the idea that I had to commit my food for the next day, I was like, I'm a 40-something year old woman. Like, why am I telling you who I've never met in my life what I'm going to eat the next day? And when I asked another fellow that, she said to me, she goes, "You know what?" She goes, "Because we're compulsive. We make these decisions out of a split second out of nowhere." She goes, "But if you write down your food and commit it for the next day," she goes, "it takes the compulsivity out of it. You've already thought about it. You've already decided what you're going to eat. You don't need to stand in front of the fridge and fantasize about what's going to taste better. You've already done it." And I was like, "All right, fine." So I started doing that. And then the other thing on the list was make 3 outreach calls a day. And I was like, "I don't have time for that. Like, I have no time for that whatsoever." I have time for that. I do those calls. I still do those calls every day. And I'm blown away by the fellowship. You know, in A Vision for You, on page 164, right before we read the thing that everybody reads at a meeting, It says, "Still you may say, but I will not have the benefit of contact with you who write this book. We cannot be sure. God will determine that. So you must remember that your real reliance is always upon him. He will show you how to create the fellowship you crave." And my sponsor didn't create the fellowship that I craved, because I couldn't stand how isolated I felt. What she did is she showed me how to create. And that's what God has shown me, is how to create the fellowship that I crave. You know where I get a sense of ease and comfort right now? Outreach calls. I love outreach calls. I love talking to women. I'm like, "Oh man, like that, I totally feel the same way." That's my sense of ease and comfort. Hearing my 10-step partner's inventory today, Totally can relate. And then she heard mine. She's totally can relate. That's the sense of ease and comfort, because I'm still going to have that stuff come up. I'm still going to be resentful. I'm still going to be fearful, and I'm still going to have poor conduct. Always. I will always have those. But what I have now is a way to relieve the craziness that goes on in my head when those things come up. And I get to invite my higher power in to give me a personality change to continue to work on me so that I don't need to solve my problems with M&Ms or running or compulsively over exercising. And I'm floored by what those calls do for me, those outreach calls. She also asked me to set aside time every day in the morning for 20 to 30 minutes of prayer and meditation. Again, do you not know who I am? I have two kids, a full-time job, a husband, blah, 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 blah. And it was just that, do you not know who I am? And it's that idea of, can I be curious about what's that going to do for me? And for somebody who had next to nothing as a relation, a relationship with God, my ego oftentimes loves to tell me that I think I know what I'm doing in order to keep myself abstinent. And the truth is, I have no idea what I'm doing. I need to rely on that higher power so much. And that time that I spend, and it's not always in the morning, sometimes it's after school when I get home and no one's home. It's sometimes before bed. But to have that time, and then those moments throughout the day where I tap into that higher power, because the book lays out so clearly to me that, Dr. Silkworth, in the doctor's opinion, is saying, you have an allergy and I don't know how to fix your allergy. You just have to stop tapping into the allergy. Stop putting those foods into your mouth that are going to trigger the allergy. And then we get to Dr. Young, who's telling Roland Hazard, he's like, you've got an obsession in your brain that, like, if you could fix that and stop picking up the substance that's triggering your allergy, like, that would be fantastic. But I don't know how to do that. I don't know how to therapize you out of your mental obsession. So both of these doctors are telling me and us that they can't fix us. And what they're saying is, you need something a little bit more powerful, which is a relationship with God. And these people in Alcoholics Anonymous have figured out how to do that. Take a fearless and moral inventory. Turn your shortcomings over to your higher power. Be curious about what does someone look like who isn't selfish and dishonest and self-seeking and fearful all day long? What would that look like? What would you look like if you were the opposite of that? Give it a go. Go clean up the mistakes you've made. And keep in conscious contact with me by doing these steps over and over and over again. I'm part of a 10-step practice that I don't even know how I would live without this 10-step practice, because it forces me to go through the steps every single day. Like I said earlier, I now know what being resentful feels like. I now know what disturbances feel like. I know what fear feels like. And I know when my conduct sucks. And I know I have to inventory that to, like, and share it with God, myself, and another human being so that the food doesn't feel like it's going to solve my problem. Or running an extra mile or two, or signing up for a race, or, plugging my food into my fitness pal to see just how much weight I'm going to lose if I do this. It's a constant, it's an obsession. It's there. So when as we were working through the steps, my sponsor and I, after she said, yeah, let's do this thing. And I said, yeah, I'm willing to do it. I got to do a fourth and fifth step and discover the things about relationships with me, where I just like to, put people freeze people in their worst moments, and keep them there and not let them out of these worst moments and hold that resentment. And one of those people is my mom. just from our relationship. So I got to clean things up with her. And it was suggested after, and I've done the steps several times, and I'm also a triple winner, so I'm a part of three fellowships. But it was suggested to me to write my mom a letter once a week instead of calling her. because that wasn't working. I was trying to force a solution there. I would call her after, on my way home from an OA big book meeting every Saturday. And within like 2 minutes, I'm already digging holes and like trying to, you know, stick pins in her arguments, and just was not a good situation. And I would hang up and I'm like, God, I just don't feel serene, you know? And that this relationship is just, it's making me crazy. And so my sponsor suggested, she said, why don't you write your mom a letter once a week? And so I started to do this. I started to send her a letter, and I opted for postcards, and I would paint these, cause my mom and I used to paint together, and I would paint these flowers on there and write little notes. And I kept sending them week after week. And she never, I mean, maybe when we talk, she'd be like, oh, that's such a nice postcard, blah, blah, blah. It turned out when I got to the amends that I realized I owed my mom several thousand dollars that she had loaned me like a long time ago to buy a car. And I, you know, like the promises say, we're amazed before we're halfway through. And I was amazed that my mom gave me money and I forgot to pay her back. I just stopped paying her back. And so I owe her these amends. And so I go out to see her. She lives out in Utah. And I said, hey, mom, can I stop over? I need to make these amends to you. And I go over to her house and, make the amends. And up on her fridge are these postcards that I've been sending her for the past several months. She's got my artwork pinned up on her fridge. And I was like, oh, I said, that's funny. You have your 40-year-old daughter's artwork pinned up on your fridge. And she's like, I love them. I love getting your letters. And so, you know, that able to make those financial amends, but also these living amends where I'm trying to show up and be a better daughter to my mom that I've not been one in a very long time, by being curious, by trying something different, and you know, just writing quick little notes once a week and catching her up on our lives here. And she, you know, she ended up coming out for Thanksgiving last fall, our Thanksgiving here in the US, and which is in November. And I was a little nervous about having my mom at our house just because of the tension. And she shows up and she unloads her suitcase and she's like, I brought you something. I brought all of us something. And she brings paintbrushes and paper and watercolor paints. And she brought all these art supplies. And one of the nights of, you know, while she was here and my sister was here and her kids and stuff. And we just sat around and like painted, and, you know, and they ate their food and I didn't eat their food. And we just, you know, had a good time talking and hanging out. And that ability to be present in people's lives and show up and not be thinking about when can I sneak off into the kitchen and shove, you know, this food into my mouth and eat the way I want to eat. Because that's what I really came to OA for, is I wanted you guys to teach me to eat like a lady. But that didn't happen. What I have now is a connection with a higher power where I can be comfortable and at ease in a relationship in the same room with someone like my mom, who I got under her skin and she got under mine, you know. And it's that ability to have a personality change. And, the spiritual experience gives a really beautiful definition of what a spiritual awakening is. And it says, the very first paragraph on 567, it says, the term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. So a spiritual experience is a personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from compulsive overeating. It's not about putting down the food forever. It doesn't say anything about that. It says something about a personality change. And Which is really hard to do. I mean, doctors have been trying for years to do that kind of stuff with people like us. But the steps that are outlined in this book show me time and time again where I want to run the show and where I'm at fault for wanting that and what kind of conflict that creates when I do that kind of stuff. And, I'll go back to that relationship with my mom, but like I wanted her to act a very certain way. I had a very certain script that that woman was supposed to follow. She never followed it ever. And I would get restless, irritable, and discontent because of that. And now I can be a pretty much at perfect peace and ease around her. This past summer we celebrated her 80th birthday. And I got to show up at that party and be present, which is an amazing feeling for having never really felt present in my entire life. Because I was always preoccupied with when is this discomfort going to go away? When can I eat the way that I want to eat? And there's a part, I'm trying to find the part in the big book. It says, and there is a solution on 25. It says, the great fact is just this and nothing less, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude toward life, toward our fellows, and toward God's universe. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. Or some people say, entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. I don't know which one it is, but they both fit. And I'm blown away that I can say that the central fact of my life today is that I have a relationship with a higher power, and my higher power is the one that keeps me abstinent. Because my willpower is no good against this disease, none at all. I have a ton of willpower in so many other areas of my life, but for whatever reason, it's no good here. And that defense has to come from a higher power. And I am so beyond grateful that I get to be abstinent today, that I get to show up for my kids, that I get to show up for my husband. That I get to run a race this next weekend because I want to run the race because it's super fun and it's a race geared toward women. I'm not running it because I need to train and lose 20 pounds. I just get to do it. And I also get to not do it if I didn't want to. And I'm so blown away that I'm not driven by my disease today. And I have this beautiful relationship with a higher power. I have a beautiful relationship with so many women in my life. I get to carry this message to other compulsive overeaters, and just show up and be present because that's who God wants me to be. I don't know. I'm very grateful today. I've had a rough couple of days with my teenage son, the teenage thing. I'm glad I'm not in jail, and I'm glad I'm not overeating over it. But it's amazing that I get to rely on God to get me through all of this and to get me through life. Thanks again, Jessica, for asking me to speak tonight. And with that, I will pass.
Thank you, Alric.